Welcome one and all once again to this brand spanking new episode of Duolden, and this is coming to you the week of January 12th, 2015. I am joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And Jason.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Oh, I'm sorry. The noob gamer known as Jason.
We're going to do this again, are we?
Well, I mean, it's a good place to start. Do you want to explain why you get that nickname now?
I still don't really know. All I did was ask about if I was going to play a Final Fantasy from 1 through 6, because those are the ones available on iOS, which one should I do? And for some reason, Earl has labeled me a noob gamer because of this.
Part of
casual gamer.
Part of the reason was one that you're picking them up on mobile devices. Part of the reason was also the fact that I'm still making fun of you for the fact that you started Super Mario Bros. 3 about a year ago and you still have not beaten that game.
Well, technically that's true, but
it's true.
It's not like I've been playing it pretty much at all over that time. I started it about a year ago, and that was pretty much the last time I played it was about a year ago. So maybe that should be a New Year's resolution, that I should go back and actually play it, but
it's a game that you can literally beat in this in half an hour.
Well, you know. Maybe I'll sit down one day and do that. I have to get past the first level first, though.
It was basically because you're going back and you're trying to fill in your library with these older games, and I'm like, he's like one of those casuals who started with these recent gens. And I believe the recommendation was, you asked for Final Fantasy 1 through 6, and the suggestions given to you were 4, 5, and 6. And then I made note to tell them to suggest to you the easiest Final Fantasy game to start with. Partially because I do know those old RPGs are really a pain in the ass to get into. It would be better to start with one that isn't, you know, like you don't have 50 jobs or any of that other stuff that Final Fantasy...
I mean, I've played complicated RPGs before, but I just haven't played an older Final Fantasy.
Well, this is the thing, is that's why I didn't say 3, because 3 is basically all about the job system, and I really hate the job system myself.
Okay, mm-hmm. Just so we're clear, which 3 do you mean?
The actual 3, right?
No, I'm talking about Final Fantasy 3.
Yeah, but do you mean 3 okay.
6 is, there's no jobs in 6. And 6 just happens to be the best one as well, so that's why I was like, 6, 6, 6.
Yeah, so, well, I also asked a bunch of friends and people at work and stuff, and it was pretty much between 6 and 4. I ended up going with 4 only because it's a port of the DS remake, so the graphics are a bit better. But, you know, if I like it, I'll probably do 6 next.
I haven't played the 3DS, the DS version, I should say. But I find that the NES sprites, for the most part, hold up, and those games still tend to look good. I can't really go back to NES games.
The mobile versions don't, though. That's the thing. Like, is the, 4 is probably going to look really good if you play it on an iPad or something. But
that's what I'm doing.
I did look at screenshots of the mobile version of 6, and they seem to have made the sprites look really ugly in the, like, upscaling or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a shame because, like, 6 was all about how one of the things about 6 was that you could really get a lot of character out, even though they were these small sprites on the screen, and everything looked really nice, and obviously because Square has no taste. Well, Square of Japan doesn't have any taste anymore, you know.
So what platform would you recommend?
I would say the Game Boy Advance, but you can't just get hold of a copy on the GBA anymore.
Yeah, I also don't have a GBA anymore.
Yeah. So if you could play the GBA version without actually having a GBA through some means...
Well, I was also gonna say, I mean, it's up to Square Enix because we do know. I mean, you actually do have one now, but Game Boy Advance games are supported on the Wii U, so they could bring that to the Virtual Console
Yeah, but Nintendo get those released like once a month. Like, it's not.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not on Nintendo. That one's on Square. Because they have. We know they're capable of re-releasing Final Fantasies as we are with Final Fantasy VII on the PS4.
Oh, and they re-released a whole bunch of them on PC as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a possibility. But have you started it? I know you picked up, you ended up with 4.
Yeah, I think I'm also going to try 10 when it comes out.
Isn't 10 or, oh, you mean the PS4 version?
Yeah.
Okay, because let's just say they already did the HD collection. That you took them like 2 years to do. So,
yeah. So maybe,
and that's not even
years,
a joke. It took them like 2 years to do.
Yeah,
it's insane that it took them that long to do an HD version that a lot of people don't seem to have anymore. It's one of those weird games people say don't hold up. I don't know. It's always kind of weird to me. I know people are big into Blitzball, and I'm surprised that Square hasn't.
I don't know anybody that actually liked it.
I know a lot of people were like 10 at the time, but I feel like it's one of those. I think it's one of those games that people probably realize weren't great in hindsight. I think it's the same thing kind of happens with Final Fantasy VII, where a lot of people just seem to not care for it once they replay it.
Well, we'll find out when they release the PS port, PlayStation 4 port, the PC version.
Yeah, I'm sure people are excited. The sad thing is people are actually going to buy that. So yes, we actually have not talked about video games we've been playing since December, like the first week of December. So, have you folks picked up anything new and exciting since I guess Christmas? And what do you want to talk about?
I haven't played anything.
Well, anything new, you mean?
No, I haven't played anything, really.
Oh, interesting.
Somehow I've still managed to play a decent amount of stuff. I just haven't played. Like, I played a lot of games, just none of them for, like, extended periods of time. Like, probably, like, an hour or two each.
And the game you spent the most time with, you can't actually talk about.
Yeah. But you'll get to see plenty of that game on February 20th.
I assume before February 20th, I would hope.
Well, I mean, you'll get to actually play it.
Well, I mean, as much as you can play it. But yes, I mean, I think we talked about most of what I've played. I finished Captain Toad, which is an enjoyable ride, I already mentioned. I mentioned this on our Game of the Year recap, and if you want, my Game of the Year list is up on the website. I don't know about these two. They're second this year.
I need to catch up on a couple, but mine should be up soonish.
I played more Shadow of Mordor. I'm apparently taking it slow and steady. I'm like 6 hours into the game and have like 14% complete. I just defeated my first War Chief.
Nice.
And they introduced, this is so Batman, they just introduced villains that you can't attack from the front because they automatically block you. So you have to jump over them and hit them from the back. And it's the same thing you have in Batman. Automate enemies you have to stun before you can do anything against
them. Oh, The combat system is just completely lifted from Batman, but that's what I love about it, because that combat system is, in my opinion, like the most fun melee combat system out there. And I think it works really well in Shadow of Mordor with, you know, the layer of like swords and stuff like that, magic powers.
Yeah, I'm not too keen on the newer enemies they introduce, which is kind of like the undead stuff. I don't know their proper names. Ghouls, I guess?
The ghouls, yeah, I don't like the ghouls that much either.
Yeah, because I don't, like, is there a way to counter them? They just seem to always be able to attack you, and there's like no, like it's just kind of beating them down until you can do your super move that clears them all out.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's not, and then I just met one that spits acid or something like that, I'm like, and it's these enemies where you have to do quick time events to dodge their attacks and stuff like that, yeah. But I'm still enjoying it, and I think the final one that Jason and I can both speak on is the Halo 5 beta.
Yep.
And, okay, I think we both had this complaint, so I'm going to start here. I understand why. I wish some of the stages weren't so busy. There are times where like the blue team blends into the environment, and it's really difficult to see them until they're on you. There's just a lot of moving parts or stuff that lights up, and I'm like, I get that you're trying to show off your fancy graphical engine, but I'm not too keen on it because it's just really distracting in a multiplayer game. I just want a keen environment where I can see the enemies and the enemies can see me and we can shoot each other. That's all I need.
I guess I didn't really have that complaint. I just found the environments kind of bland.
Well, it depends. I like the environment in the new game mode, which name escapes me at the moment.
I don't even know if I played that one.
The one that's like Gears of War, where it's like one knife per round, and it's team-based, and it's more, because it's more of an arena. Like, there's, like, you know, Hyrule doesn't have a cover system, so there's more, like, barriers which are, like, you know, character high or something like that, that you can hide behind, but if you get angles and stuff like that, people can still shoot you. And it makes for a different type of strategy, because everybody doesn't just kind of run in, because, you know, it goes 5-2, 5-4, and then 5-3, and then your strategy changes because you don't want to be picked off and flanked and all that other stuff. And people try to find the high ground so that they can take advantage and cover their partners. So it introduces a different set of strategies, and it actually does help that people play as a team, or should play as a team in that mode. Where even in like the team modes, people don't necessarily always play as a team. I found it interesting. It was something different for the Halo franchise.
Yeah, I didn't, like I said, I didn't get a chance to try that mode out. I pretty much just played Slayer. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think part of it was because they introduced this mode like a week later. Like, it wasn't there from day one.
Oh, but yeah, okay. It speaks really to how I feel about the game that I haven't really been tempted to pick it back up since the first night I tried it.
Well, here's my thing with it, and I hate doing this again and again and again. And sometimes I want to play it, and I'll go on, and I'll sit in the menu for like 10 minutes.
Yep.
I think the most recent update finally added a way for you to back out, because before, like, you had to wait and wait and wait until the game told you you couldn't find matches and kick you back to the menu. You couldn't back out while I was searching for a game. But yes, I'll sit there for like 20, 25 minutes. It won't find anybody, and I'll just get frustrated and give up, and I move on. And this has happened to me like 2 or 3 times where I've gone to play the game, and I just couldn't find anybody when I wanted to. So yeah, I don't play as often. And again, this is one of the reasons I've always hated having a limited beta or demo of this sort, because you want to give people the best impression, and having me sit there waiting for people isn't fun. I mean, it's the same problem that the Halo multiplayer, the Halo Master Chief Collection has right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Like, when the beta first came out, too, excuse me, I mean, I realize it's a beta, but my God, was just like trying to get into a game, like the one of the buggiest experiences I've ever had. Like, just these weird disk like errors, and like you would hit search and all of a sudden the screen would start flickering and I'd have to reboot it just to get it to try to do it again, and just all this weird stuff.
Oh yeah, and I don't know if some of it's the beta or some of it's the system. Like, party chat doesn't always work when you're in the beta. I've had times where, like, the audio, like, I'll have music, but I will have no other in-game audio, so I wouldn't know, if I'm being shot at, because you don't hear anything, and you don't hear, like, your bullets going off and stuff. That was really a weird experience.
That's awful.
I don't consider this like a complaint of the game. I just find it funny, is that the Halo Master Chief Collection disc in your system or on your hard drive to play the game.
They have to get people to play it somehow.
But the thing is, like, if you go and it's like insert the disc, it overrides the disc, so it starts the Master Chief Collection, and then you have to go back to the beta, which is fine. I get it gets annoying, but it's not a deal breaker. I'm just like, yeah, you told me to put the disc in. You should know that. Okay, disc in. He wants to play this game, not the other game. But yeah, it's, I mean, I've enjoyed it. I have some criticisms of it, but overall it's fun. I think I mentioned, and this is, again, probably just me being picky, I don't like how the guns sound in this game.
No, I don't like it either. I can go on forever
really
about what I don't like about the Halo 5 beta, and I haven't even played it yet.
So what don't you like about it as somebody from the outside?
Okay. There's tons of stuff. I don't like how their guns sound. I don't like how big the guns are on the screen. The time to kill seems to be too short for my liking, especially with the assault rifle, but they can rebalance that one. There's a lot of annoying sounds that go off all the time, like there's a sound for when your shield's low, there's a sound for when it's empty, there's a sound for when you can't recharge because you're sprinting, there's a sound for when you're hitting people, there's a sound, obviously, because when your gun's firing, there's a sound, you know, the sounds, all of them are really obnoxious and weird, and I don't like that. I don't like the fact that the Spartans speak to each other. I really don't like that, actually, because it takes away... It's basically 343 going, alright guys, we know you're not going to talk like this in the game, but we need to know this information, so we're just going to make the characters do it. You know? Like, when I would play with friends, we would speak like that, because we would know when the power weapon is stuck, and we would know where it was, and we would know, you know, we would compliment each other on kills, but... Like, just having the characters in the game do that is really weird. And especially for the power weapons, because that's a strategy of the game. And they've basically taken the strategy away from it, if they're telling you where the power weapon spawns and when it's going to come up.
I understand that. It goes both ways for me, in that I understand it's very helpful if you don't communicate with your team the entire time, where you can kind of understand where your teammates are, like what's happening, but it is kind of a sensation overload, because you're getting all these visual cues and you're getting all these audio cues, and if you are in a party with your friends, you still get that as well.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It's like in Halo 2, Bungie made a big deal out of having this thing above all your teammates, and it told you when they were dead. So you knew when to not go near them. It told you when they were shooting at someone. It told you when they were carrying a flag. And I don't understand why they need to have this all this audio go off at the same time. If you can't see it, then it's not that important to you, you know? I don't know. Like, especially, just the power weapon thing especially rubs me the wrong way, because you're taking the strategy out of the game. And there's something that you can do even when you're not communicating with your team. Like, oh, I know the rocket launcher's spawning, and I know the rocket launcher's about to come up, I know where the rocket launcher is, so I'm going to camp the rocket launcher spawn for a bit, and then grab the rocket launcher, and then use it to kill that guy who's basically destroying their team, our team. You know, but now that the game says to you, the sniper rifle is over there, and all of your teammates are going, the sniper rifle's coming in 30 seconds, you should go get to it. You know, it's just like you're just taking the sort of easy to learn, hard to master out of the game, because you're just feeding it to everybody on a platter. You know, because once, I mean, like in when you played Halo normally, like once you remember, like the power weapons were always put in very recognizable places, and once you found the power weapon, you remembered that that's where it was, and you remember eventually, like, how often, or there, like, roughly how often it will come about. So you know, the last time I went and checked the rocket launcher was a minute ago, so I need to go and check it again, or whatever. I don't know, it's just, like, don't make your game super casual for people. Let them figure these things out on their own.
Yeah, I can understand that. But again, I don't mind them kind of taking these shortcuts to make it easier for people to jump in, and also kind of making it easier for people not to have to be on their mic during the game. Or, you know, like, some people may not feel comfortable playing the game on their own because everybody else is off in parties doing their own thing. And this way, it still gives everybody a way to communicate. I do kind of understand what you're coming from, especially with the weapons where everything's kind of marked on the map. So it doesn't make... You don't have to be in the position of it. It's just like, oh, it's coming in like 30 seconds. So everybody just runs at that point and waits for it. You know, like, basically what happens in certain stages is... Both teams will take a position opposite the weapon and just start shooting each other as they cut. Like, I forget the name of the stage, but like, there's one where like, it has the new rocket launcher. I don't know what it's something like the Mosquito. I don't forget what it's called. But basically, everybody will just take up. There's like different ways to enter. There's like four or five different ways to enter the room. So everybody will just take up an entrance, and teammates will try to make it. And basically, it's the last man standing who will get it.
Oh, the Hydra.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah, I was also disappointed to find out that they replaced the Spanker with this new thing, and I was like, you don't take away my double-barreled rocket launcher like that. There's not many games you see a double-barreled rocket launcher. You've got to keep it when you can. But yeah, I don't know. All Viva 3 really has to do is make a lot of these things options, so I can turn the Spartans talking to each other off, and I can turn the power weapon. Well, actually, even if you turn the power weapon spawn locator off, it's other people won't, which is kind of a shame. But if I could turn the Spartan, if they rebalance the weapon so it's just a little harder to kill people, especially with assault rifle, and they turn the obnoxious, they give you an option to turn the obnoxious sounds off, or they just make them not obnoxious, and they give you the option to turn the Spartan chatter off, then it will be a lot better. But I don't know. Who knows with 343?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they will turn it off. Maybe they'll give you an option. I mean, it's the point of a beta, but we shall see.
Yeah, for me, my complaints were more on, like, the moment, just the moment-to-moment kind of DNA of the game. Like, it just, I know it's kind of been talked about in the months leading up to the beta actually going public, but, you know, just, like, I feel like the game can't decide whether it wants to be a classic Halo game or, like, a modern, like, Call of Duty-style game.
And
it doesn't really succeed at being either.
I was about to say, I think that's been the problem since 4, in that they're trying to walk this really weird rope. Like, especially...
Yeah, but 4 at least still... 4 was still felt very much Halo. I mean, it had a bunch of, you know, COD aspects baked into it, but I felt... 4 still had its identity, whereas, I don't know, 5 just, everything feels off, even from little things like the thing Daniel's talking about, you know, like, I don't know, and the things, even the things you're talking about, like the sound and stuff, like, it's just, all these little things kind of add up, and it just, it doesn't feel right. It's not fun.
I don't think I'll ever understand why 343 wants, is trying to do this, and they're obviously hell-bent on it, because they've did it in 4, they added a bunch of stuff to Halo 2 Anniversary's multiplayer, which I am really not a fan of, and they're doing it again in 5, where, like, Halo 3 managed to sell 14 million copies on its own. Like, there are people out there that like Halo 3 for what it is, not what some other game is. Like, why are you trying to change it? Because, like, okay, I understand Call of Duty on average gets more sales per release, maybe, probably, but those people who like Call of Duty are only going to play Call of Duty. They're not going to play your game now that you've made it more like Call of Duty. And this is the problem we have with 4. Halo 4's player count a year after release was 20,000, compared to Halo 3, which still had 1 million people playing a year after it came out. Like, with Halo 4, like, they didn't manage to attract anybody that liked Call of Duty. All they managed to do is alienate the people that liked Halo, and I just don't understand where this is coming from. And, you know, with 4, they admitted that they hired people that didn't like Halo to make Halo 4, and it didn't get them anywhere. It got them a game that was less popular. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I understand from a business sense, if you sell 12 and somebody sells 25, you want to kind of make it up to that 25. But you do risk, like, oh, you sell 12, you're going to alienate 4 of those people. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get 5 back in return. And that is kind of what happened. And I don't think they're doing themselves any favor with the buggy as hell Halo Master Chief Collection. And then this beta, which I don't think has sold people on it yet. So hopefully they do another one, maybe over the summer, that is a better idea of what to expect. That said, have we been playing anything else?
I've been playing a little Forza Horizon 2, which is a really fun racing game. I mean, obviously the Forza DNA is, like, pretty solid, but one problem I had with 5 last year was it just really felt, it was starting to feel stale. I mean, how many times can you make a simulation racer on realistic tracks? And then, you know, keep releasing it every few years. And in the case of 5, with fewer tracks than the previous version had. And racing games have looked so good for so long, like, graphics just aren't a big selling point these days. But Horizon, you know, really takes that solid foundation, and like throwing it in Southern Europe is a great idea. Like, it's just, it's a beautiful game. Like, all the weather things and the way the sun hits off the cars and dirt while you're flying through, like off-roading races and stuff. Like, it's just a really fun game. Other than that, I've started Hyrule Warriors, which is like another one that's just like just a lot of fun. Although I don't like sometimes how long the missions are. I don't know if you ever get that.
That's always been a problem that Dynasty Warriors has had. Like, they're really fun, and then there are times where you're just like, can this mission finish, please? Because,
yeah.
You know.
I get that, especially near the end. And I especially hate it when there are kind of like those instant fail states, because I like the game. It was named my game of the year. I'm not gonna, I at no point make it a perfect game, but yeah, there are times where like it's really hard to kind of understand what's going on the map. Like, even with it on the gamepad, and it's like, if you don't hurry up, this is going to fail and you're going to lose. And it's like, but I have to do this thing, which you tell me to do, or I fail. I do like that it gives almost everything in the game a sense of urgency, but it is also kind of a pain in the ass when you, like, you're near the end and you failed a mission at the very last second because this and that happened and you weren't paying attention, or, you know, like, it, like sometimes it's not seen as a serious threat and you kind of ignore it, and then it kind of brings this huge thing to it. But, yeah, as far as, like I said, I think it was my game of the year because I enjoyed the sense of play of it. It just feels good. And you get a ton of...
The game itself is, you know, very fun. It's really cool to, you know, have to use all those characters from the Zelda games and stuff in the way that they do. And all the bosses, too, which I didn't read too much about this game going into it, so I didn't know that they were... I mean, it makes a lot of sense, obviously, but I didn't know they were going to be pulling bosses from the game, and that was really cool. And I feel like... To be honest, if it didn't have that Zelda cone of paint, I don't know that I'd really care, but for some reason that makes me so much more interested in it and makes it really fun.
Yeah, and I know some people had a problem with that, but I mean, that's the whole point of a crossover, is it's to pair a game that a lot of people probably wouldn't care about with a franchise that a lot of people do love. And, yeah. You know, like, I remember when it was first announced, people were upset because it does take away the traditional Zelda, you know, puzzle solving and other stuff, but it makes
for... Yeah, but it's not a Zelda game, you know.
Exactly. Like, they already don't call it a Zelda game. It's called Hyrule Warriors. It's not the Legend of Zelda Hyrule Warriors. But yeah, it's a ton of fun. And I think that would be a perfect place to talk about the news, because we got another one of those Nintendo crossovers that doesn't make any sense to me, but we'll probably do well. Puzzles and Dragons Super Mario Brothers Edition. This
only Japan though, right?
No, it's coming to the West, but the company behind it, Gung Ho, is saying that that's up to Nintendo to announce when. So I imagine we'll get a Nintendo Direct for that, or it will be part of a Nintendo Direct. But yes, it's been confirmed that it's coming out to the West, which. It's different for us because I don't know if either one of you played it. I don't, but I do know of it. And Puzzle and Dragon is like this huge mobile game.
It's a huge thing in my office.
is it?
That game. Yeah.
I know of the Match 3 RPG games. I play like the Marvel Avengers Alliance or Avengers Assemble. I forget what it's called. And that's similar, but it's not the same thing. Yeah, it was just kind of like Nintendo's kind of cashing in. It's like, we have this huge mobile fad. How do we get in on it without going mobile, apparently? But in Japan, it makes a bit more sense because they've already had a retail release of Puzzles and Dragons on the 3DS. Puzzles and Dragons Z. I don't know if that's a Dragon Ball Z crossover, but who knows? And that actually sells like 1.5 million copies. So if you're Nintendo, if you're Gung Ho, I'm just assuming you're looking at easy money right now. And for us, it's just a way to kind of fill in the 3DS lineup that we kind of all mentioned isn't that, not that it's bad, but it's not that full this year.
I wasn't aware that there was a 3DS lineup this year.
Well,
there's Codename Steam and
Monster Hunter 4.
And?
Fossil Fighters?
Never heard of it.
Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Okay.
But to your point, it's thinner than it has been in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, because those four games are basically what we have for the year.
Yeah.
I'm hoping there's some surprises at Nintendo's sleeve, but yeah, it's...
I mean, there's always surprises in Nintendo sleeve.
Get to hear about Ace Attorney 6 sometime this year. But.
Yeah, we also kind of have the new 3DS.
Oh,
we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But you have stuff like Xenoblade Chronicles 3DS being ported to that system as well. So there are stuff, it's just not... And I don't think Puzzles & Dragons Super Mario Brothers changes that dynamic much. I like puzzle games, because I think right now it's like $40 in Japan if you kind of translate it. I honestly think that at best, maybe $20. I can't see myself...
$35.99 it'll be in this country, because that's what all Nintendo games are by default. No exceptions.
Yeah. They've gotten pretty decent at pricing games differently, but I can see them doing this because it's such a huge brand. Well, it's two huge brands. I mean, it's Mario and it's Puzzles & Dragons. This is like if you got an Angry Birds Pokemon or something like that. And that is not a suggestion. That is not a suggestion.
An idea, yeah.
I don't want
or a Tekken Pokemon.
Which is the game everybody sees? I forget, because they announced it and then they kind of dropped the ball with it. I haven't heard anything since then. Yes, but, this does open up the avenue. I mean, to be fair, Iwata did tell us that they are open to collaborating with a lot of companies that would surprise us. And I have to say, almost everything they've announced has been surprising. No, not always in a good way, but I don't think any of them have turned out to be bad games so far.
No, and I think it's good, because, I mean, obviously, third-party support is something that they haven't always been the strongest with, particularly with the Wii U. But nobody doubts their first-party prowess or the prowess of those IPs. So getting more games from other people that are using those characters just, and pads out the lineup and everything, it's a win all around for everybody. Even if they're... some duds, or some weird things. At least they're experimenting.
I would like to see Nintendo pick, better franchises, I guess. Because Hyrule Warriors was a pretty good pick for Dynasty Warriors. Yeah. I will not deny that. But I think that, Mario and Puzzle Dragons, some cool Metroid spin-offs or something. Because
Metroid in general.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it seems like it's not Nintendo going to these companies and saying, okay, you should make this with Mario. It seems like these companies are pitching it. And if you're going to pitch, it makes sense to go with the ones you go with the big dogs. You go with your Pokemon, you go with your Mario, you go with your Zeldas, because those are the known quantities. To your point, I get it. And I've heard this suggestion before. I don't necessarily know how much I would want of it. But, people are said, they should kind of do, their own game jam where they open up their more niche IPs to, indie developers.
Yeah.
Everybody's inspired by Metroid. Have somebody actually make a Metroid game for them. Or something like that.
You
have that game who's making fast racing for the Wii U. Just give them the F-Zero license if they're not going to make one or something like that.
My God. I still can't believe we have never got an F-Zero on 3DS.
F-Zero, because F-Zero is really nice, but Metroid, come on!
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like I said, the Axiom Verge people could do the next Metroid at this rate. Or any of the 50 indie developers who are Metroidvania inspired. So we shall see. Maybe they don't want to do it because they have plans for Metroid that they haven't shared with us yet. I'm not crossing my fingers for that, but E3 is just a few months away. I guess while we're on Nintendo, we might as well talk about what Daniel was so excited to talk about before. What is it, the Ambassador new 3DS?
The new 3DS Ambassador Program, which is to say, if you are a lucky person and you spent a lot of money on Nintendo products already and you have a lot of stuff in your Club Nintendo in Europe, which, by the way, is useless, so I don't blame you if you have a stack of codes that you haven't used, you get the lovely opportunity of overpaying for a new Nintendo 3DS. Isn't that lovely? So instead of paying... what is it? I think the retail price is going to be something like 130 quid. You get to pay £180 for a white new 3DS, and a special cover. Isn't that great? And you get it. The people who, well, people who had this opportunity have already gotten their consoles, which is kind of cool that they sent them out so quick.
That's amazing.
But the point that this, I just hope this, because number one is Nintendo overcharging for what is early access to a console that you could buy already in Europe, and if you shipped it over from Australia, overpricing a cover set, and the thing that rubs me up the wrong way the most is as soon as Christmas is over, give us money for a new 3DS, please.
Well, I mean, that was...
out of nowhere.
To be fair, they already... I mean, that was pretty much what they said when they said that they weren't doing a new 3DS this year.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware that Nintendo freely admitted that they wanted to sell through the current stock at Christmas, right? That doesn't make it any less scummy, right?
Oh, it's completely scummy, but they're honest with it. It's not like they were trying to hide
their
intention.
It's scummy as fuck, and I hate the idea of the new 3DS anyway, because what's going to happen is Nintendo are going to replace the Wii U and the 3DS at, like, in 1.5 years' time, I betcha. And, like, they're just going to leave all those people in the lurch. But they're also going to say, ah, yes, but if you buy the new 3DS, then you get this stupid feature in Majora's Mask.
But isn't that, I mean, isn't that kind of the gamble you use with any
system?
Well,
yes, I get that, but the point I'm trying to say is if Nintendo had just designed the 3DS properly in the first place, I wouldn't be sitting here complaining about the new one.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, it's not. I can understand if this was the new 3DS that was coming out in the year after the 3DS, but it's been 4 years since the 3DS launch. So I think that's a reasonable time to kind of say, okay, we've seen what worked and what didn't work. We're trying to evolve the format.
Well, what I'm saying is the new 3DS is going to get dumped for something that's not going to be, because Nintendo was talking about their platform, right? Where you can write a console game and a platform game. Yeah,
I get what you're saying. It's like when people bought into the DSi wasn't going to have a long shelf life. But people kind of
no,
know
but
it.
I think it's like it's different because it's fragmenting the user base
and
more
yeah,
than the DSi
because,
did.
The DSi
fragmented the user base too, though.
The DSi didn't. The DSi, while it had it's fancy, it's got a camera and it's got this downloadable software. The DSi fundamentally wasn't a significantly more powerful piece of hardware, right?
Yeah, it had the downloadable games, but like. That's a much smaller scale than, you know, one of their stronger IPs like Xenogears not being playable on the current hardware.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, have you seen Xenogears on the new 3DS? It's not playable on that hardware either.
And not only that, not only is they're saying, oh, you've got Xenoblade Chronicles, but they're doing what they should have done in the first place, and they built the Circle Pad Pro into the console. And the Amiibo stuff. Like, they had the idea for Amiibo around, like, it was before 2012, because that's when they put it in the... That's when they released the Wii U. So they knew that they were doing this, but instead they decided to release the 3DS anyway.
But the 3DS came out at the end of 2010, didn't it?
2011.
So it came out in 2011 for us, but it came out at the end of 2010 for Japan.
Yeah, it came out before the Amiibo stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's 2 years. They could have... Like, if I'm not mistaken, I think the NFC stuff was actually implanted in the start of 2012 for them. And
I think that part's fine. You know, like, you can get those features on the old 3DS if you buy the add-on, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, for 50 quid.
But, the pricing, you know, that's its own thing. But you could buy just an updated model that has it built in. Like, that's... To me, that's fine that that's an update. It's more of an issue of fragmenting.
But, yeah, the new hardware...
Who can play what of the major games.
The 3DS should have had that hardware in it anyway, because...
I still disagree because if it was a closer time frame, I can understand. It's been 4 years where it's probably a lot cheaper to do it and have a comparable price. Like, I assume it's going to launch comparable to...
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like, it's not solving any problems, not really. Pokemon runs like crap on the 3DS, and Smash Brothers barely runs on the 3DS. It runs well, but it runs barely,
and it runs better on the new 3DS.
And Pokemon is going to run like crap on the new 3DS, and it's going to be, and Smash Brothers is going to be better on the new 3DS, admittedly. But it's just like, either way, Nintendo is going to have to write a game for the classic 3DS, because they can't just release Majora's Mask and not be able to sell it to 42 million people plus.
Yeah, which I get, and I don't think...
Don't release 3DS Nintendo and just work on your new console already.
I assume they're doing both. And that part, I agree with you in that it is going to be something that probably will not have a long shelf life. It's probably going to be replaced within a year and a half. And that I can understand as a consumer. But as a consumer, we do that with everything. People buy phones that they know they're going to upgrade in 2 years. I don't, you know, it is people's prerogative. We're kind of getting to the point where we don't expect long shelf lives for any of our products anymore.
Which is a shame. It's dumb. I don't like it.
I don't disagree with it.
Especially when Nintendo's so willy-nilly with it, you know.
The thing is,
aside from these people that got the chance to overpay for the new 3DS, right? They haven't advertised the new 3DS at all.
Well, it doesn't have a release date.
Well, and this is the thing, is, like, there are people in this country that have them already. So why don't we have a release date, and why is there no advertising?
You don't advertise if you don't have a release date. I mean, I assume that they are probably going to announce it for either 8 February or mid-March for both us and Europe. I assume that's when the marketing will roll out.
This is the thing, you guys aren't even supposed to know that this is a thing that is to happen, because Nintendo doesn't know how the internet works.
I don't think they hide the fact that the new 3DS exists. They just weren't going to talk about it in the holiday seasons for North America because, as they stated, they were trying to get rid of the 3DS stock, which as a business makes sense. You don't want to necessarily cut off the eggs of the product in the market right now. It's the same
especially
reason.
Well, I would have just released the new 3DS. I don't know when, but I would have put out the new 3DS and drop the price of the XLs, the classic XLs.
I mean, maybe that'll happen, but like at the end of the day, if they don't have enough product to sell, it doesn't do them any good.
I mean, it's
put it out in a market where they're not going to be able to sell them. Like they, I mean, whatever it like what they did is the good business decision, really.
Yeah, I mean, it may piss off.
Provided they were not able to release enough stock.
Well, I mean, that's part of the reasons why the only other place that launched aside from Japan was Australia, was because Australia is a smart enough market.
Yeah, there's nobody in Australia to sell to, let alone.
Yeah, so not a big, you know. But if you look at how people reacted to Amiibos. Amiibo sold several hundred thousands in its
opening. Well, even this,
people still complain that there wasn't enough stock. Imagine if that was in
the difference.
System.
That is the difference. The difference with that is Nintendo's been pulling manufacturing of them.
Because there's only so much infrastructure.
You can't get a Diddy Kong for crap, but are they going to restock them? No.
But there's only so much... Okay, we've had this discussion before. There's only so much stock you can do at once, and I think the biggest problem was launching so many of them at once. I mean, at the end of the day, there's, 18 or 20 Amiibos on the market
now? Do you know what most businesses do when they have things that are flying off the shelves? They make more of them.
And they are making more of them. They're just not making apparently in the quantity that everybody.
It's a risk, right? Because it's a physical good. Like it's going to take them months to manufacture and ship out. And who knows?
But Nintendo has only been manufacturing physical goods for 20-30 years.
But that's the thing. If you it gets back in the N64 days when it would take months to manufacture a cartridge. Like if they sold out of the early shipment of stock, it was just out of stock
for months. It's
just the reality of
it's just crazy to me that Nintendo started life in the early 1800s as a toy company, and here we are in the year 2015 and they can't make toys to sell them.
I think the problem is people see they don't find the ones they want, and people only want those ones because they can't find them. So it's not like there was this huge demand for Wii Fit Train and Diddy Kong before Smash Brothers launched. It's
and
not
it
they
was,
become rare that people are like, oh, I can't find them, so I want it. And
it was an unproven idea at the time. It was a risk. Amiibos could have fucked.
Oh, it's
you
still,
know,
it's
like
still
people could have just
risk.
Been like, oh, whatever.
It's still a huge
risk. So, I mean, that's a big cost to manufacture that many NFC-equipped plastic figurine.
It's not eight consoles, because what they do with excess consoles is they bundle it with new games. They put a cover. You can't repaint Diddy Kong and make him Mario.
But you could. I don't see how you couldn't do that. You can bundle them with consoles.
You can do other stuff with it, but I'm just saying, like, as an endeavor, you don't want. Like, it's better for them to have all of the amiibos they send sell out than it is for them to have millions of amiibos sitting there because they overestimated the demand for Diddy Kong or Wii Fit Trainer instead of underestimating it. Like, I understand people are frustrated. I understand people see it as them even money on the table. But at the same time, we've been through this before. Nintendo has, three consecutive years of losses. Part of those losses was the fact that they had millions of dollars of Wii U systems sitting in their shelves because they couldn't sell them. You don't want that because unmovable software, hardware, or whatever is just a really pain in the ass to get rid of. Systems, you can kind of find ways for that. With the amiibos, if they had access and people weren't buying them, they're stuck with them. It's not like you're going to rebundle them with another game really quickly. But yes, I completely understand people's frustration. And then you have people gaming the system. This isn't in the news because I think it's insane. But you have that one dude who spent, he spent like $1,500 on Rosalina amiibo so that nobody else can pick them up because he hates the character. Yes, it's going to become really difficult for people to find Rosalina amiibo.
Is that a thing that actually happened?
Yes, it is a thing that actually happened. I'm surprised you did not read about it.
No, I haven't heard of it before now.
And he says he has $35,000 more to do it, and he's going to buy it. He's going to buy up the stock of characters like Lucina and a bunch of other characters. He seems to hate Nintendo's, hate this term so much, their waifus.
So there's some extreme cognitive dissonance here. So I don't like these characters, so I'm going to spend $50,000 almost on figurines of these characters.
Yes, my thought process was the same thing. It's like, this sends the opposite message to Nintendo that you want. It's like, oh, this character's really popular.
I love Rosalina and Daisy and Peach so much, I'm going to spend $50,000 on them.
Yes, and this is an actual guy who's, like, I assume
wow.
that, yeah. Apparently he's a huge Sonic fan as well.
That doesn't surprise me in the least. I'm sorry if you're a Sonic fan, but that doesn't surprise me in the least.
It's like this weird disconnect where it's like, yeah, you're spiting these people, but you want to spite Nintendo, and you're sending them the opposite message where it's like, these characters are really more popular than we assumed. Like, next thing you know, there's going to make a Rosalina standalone game or something because her amiibo was so hot.
Now I've heard everything. That's fantastic.
I read this, and I'm like, this has to be a joke. But no, he's done interviews, he's posted, like, pictures with his pre-orders. He has a video on YouTube about how to make the amiibo system for Smash Brothers or something like that. It's one of those really kind of, I think he has autism. I could be wrong, I didn't even know there was a website that people have for online trolls where you kind of go through their history. It's really weird what you find on the internet.
Yeah.
But moving on.
Wow.
I guess in the final piece of Nintendo news, I could be mistaken here, Nintendo is exiting the Brazilian game market.
Yes, because I don't know if you know anything about what it's like to buy video games in Brazil.
No.
But there was a thing that was not long after the PS4 came out, that if you wanted to buy a PS4 in Brazil, it would cost you something like the equivalent of $2,500 US, because the import tax when you manufacture a product and you ship it into the country for Brazil is so high that they have to obviously adjust the price of the product to account for it. And I guess the Wii U just isn't selling enough in Brazil for Nintendo to justify it anymore.
I mean, to be fair, it's probably not selling well enough anywhere for them to justify it.
Well, yeah.
But yes, that is insane. Brazil is in a huge market, and it seems like if that's the case, it's not going to be a huge market.
Well, the thing is that Brazil is, people put their products out in Brazil not because it is a huge market, but because it's potential to become a huge market.
Yeah.
It's a second world country, and it's like teetering on the edge of becoming a first world country.
Yeah.
And as soon as it does, people are going to start buying stuff in that country like crazy. And you want to be there selling your video games because people will pay for them.
Yeah, I imagine
Nintendo obviously can't justify it.
Yeah, I imagine that if they owe the import tax, they'll be right back. I assume everybody will be right back when it gets to the point where you can buy stuff there at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay. We also had news of the PlayStation Now subscription model, which I am completely on a different... I'm on a completely different wavelength, apparently. I thought $20 a month seemed like a very reasonable price, and everybody else seems to think it's way too expensive.
I thought it was a pretty reasonable price, well, too, and you get a discount if you buy multiple months.
Let me give you the ultimate argument to what you have, Earl, right? I could pay $180 a month, a year even, for PlayStation Now, right? Or I could go to Amazon.com, right? Let me do this right now. I could search for PS3 and I could buy one for $187.95.
Yeah, but I think it's more of...
Yeah, but
I think
then
it's
you have
more
to
of
buy the games and stuff and the convenience of it, just like...
Yeah, I think
can be stream movies.
I don't think it's for people like us. I own a PS3. Jason owns a PS3.
Not anymore, actually.
I own a PS3. And a lot of the games on the PS3 were kind of multi-platform games, and if they aren't, they're getting HD remakes on the PS4 anyhow.
And the thing is, though, is there's a lot of caveats to PlayStation Now. And I don't, like, if I could go out and I can buy a PlayStation 3 on Amazon, brand new, for just a little bit more than it is to pay for PlayStation Now a year, and I don't get any of those caveats, then... Why wouldn't I just go and buy a PS3 if I really wanted?
But that's you, right? Like, so you're like, but there's a large group of other people that would rather just have access to this streaming library.
Yeah, and then when they get access to the streaming library, they realize, oh, hang on, I can't buy any DLC for this game. Oh crap, my internet's being really bad today, but I really want to play. I don't know,
okay,
some game.
That would be me, because Jason's fit can't be me. I can't even fit online. I can't imagine streaming will be a fun experience. But I also think I think a lot of people are thinking about this purely as a console thing. But this is not just sticking to PS4 and PS3.
Right.
It's coming to TVs. It's coming to smart devices. And I think if people are like, oh, I have an Apple TV, I can get this and I can play games, I think it has some benefit to it. I think $20 is a reasonable price. I could be mistaken, but I think you also need PlayStation Plus, which I do find weird.
Do you? I actually don't know. I probably should know this.
That I find weird, but I think because we're kind of so spoiled on everything being sub $10, Netflix, Hulu, I guess HBO Go, when that becomes a thing, Amazon Prime, that anything over $10 seems like a big deal. But
yeah,
I think
games cost more than movies in general. You know,
yes.
So like, it's not fair to expect.
Oh no,
a
I'm not.
Gaming service to match the price of a movie service. That's
my
never
biggest
been the
fear.
Case.
My biggest fear for that though is games are also bigger than movies, and a lot of countries, even this fair United States, a lot of people have data caps, and streaming a game will probably eat through that. I mean, streaming a movie is like 5 to 10 gigs.
Yeah, I mean, that is a consideration that people will have to have, but I mean, ultimately, there's nothing that Sony or anybody else can who wants to be streaming
to do about
that. You
don't need to be a PlayStation Plus subscriber.
Okay.
I didn't think
to have
so.
A PlayStation Plus subscription to use PS Now, which is, okay, fine, but I just see it from a case of, I could buy another box, and I'd have an infinitely better experience.
But the long-term vision of the service is more that you don't need to buy another box, right? Like Earl was saying, like you could play it on your phone or your TV you already just bought or whatever.
But it needs to be a better proposition than having another box, and I think
the proposition.
But this
and
is
I,
laying the groundwork for that to come down the line.
I think the proposition will be more the library, and I think it will be more important or impactful the further and further we get away from the last gen, because right now a lot of these games are still fresh in our minds, and like I said, a lot of these games are still kind of available on the PS4 and the Xbox One in some capacity. But when you go 3-4 years down the road, I do think PlayStation Now is a future service and not necessarily a now service. And I don't necessarily
that's
think
ironic.
Yeah, I know. And I also don't think it's a service for us. It's a service for people who probably game but don't necessarily want to spend $400 or $500 on a system, and they already have these devices that are capable of doing it.
It's just like there's people who will buy, you know, tons of Blu-rays, and then there's people who will just pay a Netflix subscription, and they don't have the same selection, but, you know, what they have works for them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's fair. I do think it's fair. It's going to be more about the library than the price, I think. And I'm curious to see how people react to it. But yeah, I don't expect this to do well first year, but I do expect it to continuously grow year after year. And I think it's an exciting proposition. I see a lot of people mention this, and I could see it. I also can understand why they wouldn't, because of money. But it would be nice if Nintendo did something similar with the Virtual Console. Like, I would, you know, like, that's a much better proposition, because they have their library. And
I think the problem that Nintendo has, though, is they just can't release. They can't release the games often enough, and even when they do, it's games you don't want, like Pokemon Puzzle Challenge, for God's sake. Nobody ever wanted that game, but they set up anyway.
But doesn't a streaming service, in the case of Virtual Console, like, kind of negate that? Because they had, the problem is they need to re-release these games on the new consoles they come out with, right? But if it's all just streaming, and at that point, platform agnostic,
then
the library only grows.
But the thing is you need to have a library to start off with, because obviously nobody's going to use it, and you need to grow it in a timely fashion. And Nintendo said something like, wasn't it like when the Wii U came out? Before the Wii U came out, they were like, yeah, we're going to have Game Boy Advance games on the Wii U. And how long did it take them to do, like, even do anything about that?
I think Nintendo's biggest problem with their Virtual Console is that they've always kind of been stickers for making sure the games played as much as you remember them to, which is why they usually go, like, every game goes through product testing. It's not like they just do a big, you know, like, a lot of people say, like, do emulators. Emulators just kind of, they throw it out there and they fix it as it comes. Like, there's certain games you still can't run on, like, Super Nintendo emulators and stuff like that. But Nintendo's like, okay, we're going to test every game to make sure it works. And that kind of slows down the process. It's not a big team dedicated to it.
Well, and this, but the thing, though, is it's not going to be any different for a streaming service. I mean, yes, you can say, right now, they only really do, like, Virtual Console games on one platform. Like, you don't see the same releases come out on the Virtual Console on the 3DS and the Wii at the same time. So, like, there's still going to be, like, initial Nintendo, we're going to take forever because we want it to work properly.
Well, I mean, it depends. Like, they could literally just take the games that they have on the Wii U, because the Wii U stuff has online functionality. Not necessarily online multiplayer, but it has stuff at Miiverse built in. It has customizable control schemes. It, you know, it emulates well. I know a lot of people have problems with the Game Boy Advance emulated, because it tends to make they kind of kept it too much, where it kind of darkens the screen to the original Game Boy Advance. Yeah, I don't notice as much, but I have seen screenshot comparisons, and yeah, it's very dark. But yeah, you can take that stuff, and, you know, people do but there are over 100 games on the Wii U's Virtual Console, so that would be a decent start, and then you can add games to it. And I do think, more importantly, they would get more third parties on board to kind of support that service as well, where, like, right now, it's basically Nintendo and Capcom for the most part, with and I guess Konami with the Castlevania games. But you also have the benefit of, like, oh, we're going to do this. We can take the Game Boy games as well that we have on the 3DS Virtual Console. I think the reason they would be against it is because it's a set stream, instead of, like, okay, somebody's going to pay $5 for Urban Champions, like, 15 times, because why not? Or somebody's going to buy Super Mario Bros. 3 four different times, because we offer it four different times and something like that. But I do think it's a more exciting proposition than Sony, because it's a much older and not necessarily, it's a much harder to find library of games. Like, you can't go to the store.
The problem is it would require Nintendo to have some kind of cohesive infrastructure, and we all know that Nintendo can't do that to save their lives.
Well, I mean, they've been improving.
Yeah, but they don't improve fast enough.
They could hire Grizzle to do it. Grizzle seems to be their Emma Hayden studio. Have them just do that full time. I think actually right now it's not Nintendo of America, it's NST that handles most of this. And I feel bad for them, but what can you do? Okay, that's PlayStation Now. Was Microsoft in the news at all this past month?
Apart from that one time that Phil Spencer said, oh, I'm going to be at the Windows 10 event, and then everybody that plays games on PC let out a groan at the same time.
Oh, yeah, and we were all wrong. Microsoft actually did raise the price of the Xbox One pack.
Yeah, they did a stupid, stupid thing. They should have just kept it because it sold like that.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Well, you know, when in a way, I kind of see like them from their perspective, like, why not? Like, they obviously got a big boost from the holiday sales, right? So now they're, I don't know.
So why not?
Like, what do they have to lose? But, like, how many people really buy consoles in, like, January or February anyway?
Yeah,
they can always drop the price in, like, 3 months.
Yeah, I think from Jason's point of view, I understand. Business, like, the console sales.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
No,
I agree with you guys. But.
Console sales are the weakest at the start of the year, except for maybe March when people get their income tax reforms. And you can do a bundle then. You could probably do, like, a Halo Master Chief Collection bundle or something like that.
I think it works by then. This time
if
it works properly, edition.
Yeah, but you can, and then you can say, okay, you know, we've heard the demand. We're going to drop the price officially to $350. You give them a short boost near the middle of the.
That's a good point you make, isn't it? Microsoft are all about doing things the wrong way and then going, we heard you, we know, we're listening to you, we'll do it the right way this time. So
we listen to our fans.
Yeah, we listen to our fans. We just have to royally cock up in the first place.
But yes, it was. I was like, it wasn't even like I, if they did it, I kind of expected it to be quiet. But they actually kind of announced, like, "Oh, the Xbox One price is going back up, so this is your ass chance to get it." I'm like, "No, you do not draw attention to that." But yeah. What else do we have? There's a new Friday the 13th game coming out. Well, it was announced. It seems to be like it's Evolve, where you play as a bunch of survivors and. One character plays as Jason Voorhees, and I think that has potential. Like, I was between Evolve and that Sony game that I can't remember the name of, Jason.
Which one?
The one, the survival horror game that's like a David Cage game.
Until Dawn?
Until Dawn. Yes, between those two, I think that it would be a great time to actually do like a proper survival. I think if they did Until Dawn, like Evolve, like, you know, like the kind of real time events and stuff like that, it would be cool. But I was unaware. This is the first Friday the 13th game in like 25 years. I am so surprised we have somehow not milked that franchise, even though they've done a good job of doing it in the movies.
I was gonna say, there's enough movies. We don't want games as well.
Well, because apparently there's also a TV show coming out, which is part of the reason the game's coming out. I don't know what the TV show's about. I don't think it's about Jason. So maybe it will be like the Friday the 13th. Wait, I'm getting it confused with Halloween. I was going to say maybe it's going to be like Halloween 3, but that's a different franchise.
That's the problem, though. They both got milked to death, so we can't tell the difference at this point.
And they both star mute anti-heroes or whatever. We also had a fun video game shuffle. At this point, it seems like the video game industry is just self-sustaining, and that people move, but they just kind of move in a circle. And
this is the problem, though, is because most of the way that games journalism in general is funded is just unsustainable. You know, they can't get advertisers apart from the people that they're supposed to be criticizing in the first place. And even then, it's hit-based, it's view-based on the adverts, and a lot of people that are into video games know how to use ad blocker and prefer to use ad blockers. So, you know, I guess we should mention the actual news, which was Greg Miller, Colin Moriarty, and two others. I'm not sure who the other two.
That's kind of the same reaction I had. It's like, I know Greg, and he knew Colin. The other two was like, yeah, and then those two.
they left IGN, even though they're kind of doing their own things at IGN sometimes still, to pursue their own sort of collaborative thing that they've been doing for a while, and they also have their own Patreons as well as a Patreon for this collaborative thing that they're doing. And You know, I don't like it when people get, like, oh, they're just going to go onto Patreon and sponge off the people there. Like, if people want to give them money, then they can. If they don't want to, they can also not, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see a problem with that. If people want to fund... Here's how I see it, right? If people want to fund the things that they like to watch or like to consume, then that's better than them being advertised on by the companies they're supposed to be criticizing in the first place.
Yeah, it's better to serve your readership than your advertisers, right? Like, that kind of idea.
You know, because otherwise we're going to have a situation like Jeff Gerstmann had at GameSpot, and we don't want that, you know?
Yeah. But, I at the same time, I've had this discussion with Jason before, and I think growing up, I also don't like the fact that the industry is becoming more personality-driven than news-oriented.
Oh, I understand that. That's a good concern, because obviously, I'm just watching this video because Greg Miller's funny, instead of actually wanting to know, like, things that people should know, like if all of a sudden a company goes belly up and people need to know about why that happened. I totally get that. It's more entertainment focused than it is.
Than it is. Which I get, because, as you know, the reason that people are even this stuff is that we don't necessarily have, you know, there's not necessarily money in video game news. We mentioned in our pre-show when we were looking for notes for this, is like there are websites that are reporting on stuff like the Ant-Man trailer, or like there was a DC Marvel mashup trailer a couple of weeks ago. Video game sites are reporting on that, and that's because that draws attention. That's what people are interested in, not necessarily purely gaming news. And, you know, it's good and bad, but yeah, it is, a lot of it is becoming personality driven. And part of it for me is that I think a lot of the personalities tend to be negative. We have stuff like Yahtzee and Jim Sterling, and there was an annoyed gamer. You know, there's Total Biscuit. You know, everybody's an angry gamer, an annoyed gamer, a bitter gamer, a sad gamer. And I get why, because negativity sells. People love when you get angry and vindictive.
And actually, this is something...
Well, especially in this industry.
Yeah, this is something that I've spoken to my friends about, because it probably shouldn't surprise anybody that I have a bit of a reputation of being very negative about video games. And somebody said to me, I said to somebody, I could never go onto Twitch and try to be like a Twitch personality. And they said, why not? Like, you'd be really funny if you just complained about games. And I said, exactly my point. That's exactly it. Like, in order to get anywhere, I just have to complain about video games the way I always do, instead of doing something that I would actually watch. And that I wouldn't do it if I wouldn't actually watch it myself. You know? Like, yeah. I have problems with the way Total Biscuit does things, but for the most part, his video content is of high quality, and I watch it because it's informative. I don't watch it because he is angry about things. I don't watch Jim Sterling when he's angry about things. I watch things when he talks about why he likes Dynasty Warriors, because it's just junk, but he loves it, you know? And I watch people like Errant Signal and Super Bunny Hop because they're interesting people and they have something to say that might actually challenge how I think about things, instead of, this game sucks.
It's one of the reasons why I'm a huge fan of Kyle Bossman. He tends to be, even when he's angry, he tends to take it from a different angle than, oh, this makes me angry. It's more, he's an intelligent young man, I say it, and I think he's older than I am, who, like, a lot of his stuff, he kind of just, you know, his anger and stuff, he jumbles behind metaphors and funny videos. That makes sense, but he still gets his point across.
Actually, Kyle Bossman is a great one, because he was talking, I was watching some video, and he was talking about why he hates Toy Story 3. And I was like, oh, this is interesting, because Toy Story 3 is a good film. And he was talking about how when they take the batteries out of Buzz and they reset him, that they're abusing his character, because it just reminds you that they're just toys and they're actually things and they're not people, which is why you like the characters, because they have character and they're not just toys until they reset Buzz and they take his batteries out. And I thought about that and I was like, I never realised that. Like, that's really cool that's a good reason to not like the film. And it's not just him complaining about it, it's him giving an interesting point to think about.
Yeah, and he does that with games. I mean, one of his favorite games from last year was Donkey Kong Country Returns. Tropical Freeze was his favorite game from last year. And he made, you know, several good points about it. He even compared it to Mario, in not necessarily a negative way, but in a way that, like, Donkey Kong feels more organic because it feels lived in, where Mario just happens to be, like, there's platforms here for him to jump on for no reason. And it's a way to compare games without, you know, necessarily citing one, but highlighting why. When something does something similar but does it more intelligently, it works and it actually helps you enjoy the game more. But yes, and I guess, like I was saying, like the industry's cyclical, but I think nobody exemplifies that more than Max Scoville, who, if I'm not mistaken, has gone from G4, Destructoid, Kotaku to IGN. He's been to Destructoid like 3 times now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, when he left Destructoid again at the end of the last year, I was like, I didn't know he was back there. But he after now he's the video editor for IGN.
And this is the thing, is, like, I liked Mike Scoville most when he was with Tara Long and with Adam Sessler, and they were talking about things in an interesting way, not because they were just slating on things all the time. You know, the casual Fridays where they would just sit about and talk about something stupid that's kind of relevant to video games. You know, they were great. And that fell apart, which is a shame. And, yeah, I don't know. And I think the most interesting one that out of all these moves is Patrick Klepek going to Kotaku, because I think it's clear that they're actually trying to improve their output. And I don't think they're going to fully recover from their very interesting past reputation, I guess you could say. But, like,
that's if a you're kind gonna, way if, of putting it.
I mean, how else can I put how else can I describe them writing about Japanese bread that looks like vagina or something? I don't know.
They were ahead of the curve and putting useless content on the web.
Yeah, and I think by hiring Patrick Klepek, they're trying to sort of undo that, because
because it's the same thing that's kind of like, there's what Jason Schiever, and he's pretty good at as well, but the fact is, like, even if you have great content, you still put out this crap, and it's like, yeah, like, your good content doesn't really necessarily bounce it out enough. Who kind of come to expect this from you, so even if you have this great turnaround, it's still, yeah, you still do some, and it's not going to change because it seems to be the thing of Gawker Media and any of the sites they run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who may or may not fill his shoes. I don't know if they said they're going to find somebody to replace him on Giant Bomb.
Well, Patrick was just a news writer because he moved out to California or whatever. So I don't know. It's possible that they just won't.
Yeah, it's possible. Like, he mentioned that he wasn't always, like, you know, there wasn't a role for him when he originally applied to them. It was something that they kind of created for him, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's something that they're going to replace. I think it would be great because, you know, speaking of, you know, personality-driven, I think Giant Bomb is completely personality-driven, and I think they might have been the first website that kind of done that. I don't know if they even report on news that often, but almost, you know, like, everything people talk about with Giant Bomb is either the Quick Looks or the Giant Bomb cast.
Yeah, or just the random one-off stuff they do, like the Mario Party parties.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's personality-driven, and, you know, PAX Rumble and stuff like that. And not to end on a bitter note, Awesome Games Done Quickie 2015, which as of now is over. But I love watching that. Well, I hate watching it at the same time, because it just makes me feel like I can't play video games.
Noob.
hey, if you can be Ocarina of Time blindfold, you let me know, then you can call me a noob. But yes, last night I watched the Ocarina of Time blind run, and I was like, the stuff this dude comes up with to kind of go through this game was insane. Like, he was doing, like, there's stuff you can do in that game to, you know, trick it out and stuff, like, memorizing all that, the stage layout and the rooms and all that other stuff to get through dungeons and chapters was just insane. They kicked it off with the Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze one that just made me seem like I played the wrong game because they made it seem like a child's play. Like, this dude was doing, like, short jumps and long jumps all over the place, and he was just missing everything and getting through stages that took me 5-6 times to get through. First try, no problems. With no monkey support. Oh, I should say, it wasn't Donkey. It was Cranky Kong Country Tropical Freeze starring Donkey Kong with appearances from Diddy. I mean, with appearances from Dixie, and everybody hates Diddy. There was one part I remember, and I felt so bad that, like, if you get Diddy Kong, you want to kill yourself. I'm like, oh, I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, but, I really like watching these, because, I mean, I was watching, I don't know, it might have been Summer Games Done Quick, and there was a guy that was running the original Halo, and I thought, oh, I know all the tricks that he's going to use. And then he used, like, a bunch of tricks that I didn't know about. I mean, there were some that I did know, I mean, and it's what kind of inspires me to do game development anyway, because you see a lot of how the games work in these speedruns. Like, for example, Ocarina of Time, you kill Ganon with the stick you get, because somebody at Nintendo gave it the same attack power as the Master Sword or whatever. You know, and stuff like that. I mean, and Halo, like, I knew that there was a section in the game where all the triggers, the enemy spawn triggers, you have to go through them in order, and if you miss one out, it just ignores the rest of them, and it never spawns any enemies for the rest of the level. And it's figuring out how games work like that that really inspires me. And Awesome Games Done Quick and Summer Games Done Quick and all these marathons, you know, I get to see stuff like that. You get to see people play Tetris, Grandmaster 3, Terror Instinct.
Oh, what was it? Pokemon Plays Twitch?
Yeah, there was
Twitch plays Pokemon.
No, there's a Pokemon Plays Twitch.
somebody set up a bot to play Pokemon and stuff like that. It's really cool to see, like, this, like, games being played in completely, like, unfathomable ways. Like, yeah, and then they get to raise money for charity as well.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it also shows that video game bugs that aren't necessarily a bad thing, because Ocarina of Time is full of them. But they're not a game-breaking, like, stuff you literally have to track down, but it does help you skip out of the game, out of the content, out of the boss. You know, like, you can, like, there was one, like, I think the first boss in the Deca Tree, he beat in one hit. And I'm like, I didn't know you could do that. But, yeah, it was just really fun to watch. Like I said, it's over now, but there's a, yeah, there's, archives of, like, everything they've done. I don't know if they reached the $1 million mark. I know
Well, the fundraising total, because the stream's on now, I don't know what it is they're doing exactly, but the fundraising total from people that have just donated is $1,407,612.
Oh, so it is, they have reached...
But there's more than that, because there's a Humble Bundle as well, that raised... it doesn't say how much that they raised, but they raised, obviously, more through the Humble Bundle. So they've smashed the $1.5 million mark, at least.
Okay. Yeah, and I know Notch just came in, I think, first day and dropped, like, $60,000.
Yeah.
That was cool. I did not like Total Biscuit. I thought that was kind of scummy.
Wait, what happened with that?
He donated money, and it was basically to say, like, GamerGators aren't bad people.
Oh.
It was basically like, oh, you know, like, everybody says that gamers aren't inclusive, but here's a... And I'm like, yeah, don't use it to put it... And that does remind me, in a somewhat related note, Nintendo's also sponsoring Apex this year. And from what the Apex creators, showrunners have said, it seems like it's going to be more than a sponsorship deal. So I'm curious about that. Though it brings up my least favorite part of the industry, and that's the Smash Brothers community. Because them spent time complaining about the fact that because Nintendo's sponsoring this event, that means no Project M. And, yes, a company probably does not want to support a game they don't make that is a mod of their game.
It requires you to modify the software of one of their systems, you know?
Yeah, it's weird that they wouldn't allow that. It's so strange.
Screw you, Nintendo, for doing something good.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, people were so upset when they kind of backed out, when they tried to block it from EVO a few years ago, and now they're sponsoring these events, and it's like, they're taking away the game I want to see. It doesn't do them any good to have Project M there. They can have Melee, they can have Brawl, they can have 4 Wii U and 4 3DS. They make money off of those games.
Yeah.
A mod of their game doesn't do anything for them, and they probably don't want to highlight it. But
they're putting their name onto something that could potentially be a... a detriment to their brand, because it's not, because there are people that are there that don't represent the company and they could do whatever, you know. They're taking a risk, you know. Just let them be.
Yeah. But it's going to be fun because Sony's sponsoring the Capcom Bowl, Nintendo's sponsoring Apex. Microsoft is usually somewhere with Killer Instinct. So all the big three are kind of getting into the fighting game community. So it should be fun to see. But I think that will do it for us this week. Unless you gentlemen have any other news to talk about?
Nope.
Okay, so for Jason, Daniel, and myself, this has been not yet. Hopefully, with the right amount of planning and everybody's schedule lining up, our Game of the Year show should be next week. That is, hopefully, fingers crossed, I's and T's dotted and crossed and all that other stuff. But now, this has been The Wilden for Monday, January the 12th, 2015.